This is episode 73 of the Fifth Estate podcast. Conservative distrust of the media. All right, it is time for another episode of the Fifth Estate. My name is Jay Caruso. I am here with my co-host, Mrs. Amy Otto. How are you?
I'm doing excellent tonight, Jay. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. We're closing in on Christmas. We're about, two weeks away here. Oh, not even, 10 days, less than 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
You get all your shopping done?
No, so not prepared. Thank God for Amazon.
Oh, I know, right? It's like it really did sneak up this year, which is kind of crazy. It's just like I'm saying, it's the day after Thanksgiving, and now here it is. It's December 14th as we're recording this. We've got just that amount of time left to get all that stuff done. So, folks, hey, look, as we always say at the beginning of the show, if you like what you hear, if you like the show, please go out to iTunes, leave us a review, leave us a star rating, tell your friends to subscribe. More subscribers for us and more reviews for us and more star ratings for us allows us to reach a bigger audience, so we appreciate that. All right, so Amy, this past week, we're going to talk a little bit about the media here. They didn't have a very good week. CNN particularly did not have a very good week. They released a story, and for those who maybe don't know already, we'll just kind of talk about this real quick. What they did was, the story essentially, CNN thought that they had the scoop, the one that actually proved the collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians during the 2016 presidential election. It had to do with some documents released by WikiLeaks, and according to the way the story was told, if the WikiLeaks documents were released at the time that they said they were, it proved this kind of connection. It turned out later, I don't even know the specific details, they got the dates wrong. Like there were the dates were, you know, the September 4th versus September 14th. Bottom line is the documents in question were publicly available at the time that Trump made certain statements related to WikiLeaks and Russia and everything. So the story blew up. Nobody at CNN was fired. This was not like, or suspended. It was not like a Brian Ross kind of thing where he just purposely went and got the story wrong. This was a situation where they said that they were burned by their sources who claimed that the story, you know, this is what they claim. And they said they checked with the sources and the sources got it wrong, but they, you know, a lot of people had said, well, maybe you guys should identify these sources if they gave you bad information. But Brian Stelter said no. When they went back and checked, they determined that the sources didn't purposely mislead them. So they said that they weren't going to kind of out them to the public as a result. The overall point is that it fed directly into the narrative of why people, conservatives for the most part, do not trust the mainstream media. And there were several things that happened since then as a result that made it even worse, because what happens is, and Amy, I'll let you jump in here too, is that what happens is, no media outlet, television, newspaper, whatever it is going to be, is going to get everything right. There's always going to be mistakes in this business. I mean, that's just how it works. I've written stuff and I've made mistakes. You got to go back and you have to fix it. You get something wrong, you take a quote out of context, you do something that isn't right, and you go back and you fix it. And that's fine. That's part of the business. I think what gets people riled up is that there's this obvious bias in the media. I don't like the term liberal media, but I mean, if you look at how the media has covered Donald Trump, they're all slapping each other on the back for how diligent they've been in covering the Trump administration. Conservatives are thinking, well, that's great, but, you know, why didn't you do that during the Obama administration? you know, why didn't you dig deeper in the IRS scandal? Why didn't you dig deeper when you found out that reporters were having their phone records looked through, or that a reporter from Fox News was being declared a
James Rosen. Yeah,
it was James Rosen was mm-hmm. made into a unindicted co-conspirator, reading his emails, looking at his phone records, tracking his movements. Everybody reacted in anger, but there was never any follow-up. There was never any kind of, like, you know, there was nothing that was, there was no outrage du jour that was covered on cable news for 3 weeks after this happened, after those things happened. It happened for a couple of days, and then it died down. Whereas with Trump, everything is, you know, hair on fire for a few days before the next round of hair on fire. You know, Amy, do you kind of agree with that?
You know, well, I mean, I don't even think it matters that it's Trump per se. This is just how they cover Republicans. You know, I know they've been getting all right. Like, we got it wrong, but we're tired of being accused of these things. I'm like, so you're just saying you're terrible at your job? But I find it odd that they're always terrible in their job in one particular way. I mean, my example for me is like the children's healthcare program that, you know, Jimmy Kimmel and all these news reports are saying, you know, those mean Republicans yet again want to kill children. Not one news outlet actually fact-checked Kimmel's monologue. All these people are sharing it. And no one has actually reported that the stopgap funding was provided and the Democrats voted against it. No one's reporting any of that stuff. And that's what's just, that's the kind of consistent thing that really strikes me as unfair, is if the Democrats are the one who voted against the children's health plan,
right,
stopgap funding, because then they know the media will go around and say the Republicans, you know, aren't passing CHIP this year. It strikes me as a really major problem. And to dig back to the first story you were saying about the CNN mistake, the mistake, those sources that they were talking about were Democrats in Congress using them to influence the news cycle and giving them wrong information to influence the news cycle, and then them running with it and not checking their sources. And this is the problem. I mean, that they don't fact check Democrats. They don't actually cover when Democrats are full of crap. And I'm happy if they cover when Republicans are wrong, because their job is supposed to fact check the government. And it shouldn't particularly matter who's in power or who did it. And that is the reason that there is a huge, I think, loss of faith in the media, because it's so blatant. It's so ridiculous. And then, you know, to your point about Trump, I mean, he does seem to incite them in a new novel way, but it's because they'll report on stupid things like how much Diet Coke he drinks and other things, you know, and always here's a tweet and let's all freak out about it. You know, like Kristen Gillibrand was pulled out of a meeting because the president tweeted about her. Stay in your meeting, you know. I mean, if you wanted to put Trump in his place for these tweets, like, stop reacting to them like lunatics. This is the stuff that... I just think the news media is very superficial. They're very stupid. They're easily misled, and their bias is pernicious and obvious. And that, therefore, I think, you know, conservatives, right-leaning or independent thinkers are right to kind of, you know, turn their nose up at this and not believe them anymore as credible sources.
Yeah. I mean, the CHIP thing is funny. And of course that leads into, you know, I don't know if you saw, you know, the Jimmy Kimmel with another one of his tearful pleas before his audience of, you know, that they were the mean evil Republicans, you know, are letting CHIP expire so that they can fund tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. And I think it was the Washington Post fact checker actually did something, didn't give him any Pinocchios, but basically if you read through it, they continually say Kimmel was wrong on this. Kimmel's wrong. Kimmel's wrong. Kimmel's wrong. Kimmel's wrong. The only thing that he got right, apparently, in his little speech was some of the things that he said that kids are afflicted with. Like, nobody knows that, you know. So it's like he was listing off sicknesses that kids get. Okay, everybody knows that. I mean, okay, he got it right. Big deal. So it's basically he said, you know, the sun rises in the east, and it was one of the facts that he got correct. The problem with this is that, and it was Stephen Miller Redstees who kind of did a tweet on this, pointed to about 7 or 8 media outlets that reported, quote, I'm using quotations here, finger quotes, reported on Kimmel's little speech without any critical analysis of anything that he said and whether or not it was true. It was just, oh, this is what he's saying. So it was like the Washington Post and CBS and Vanity Fair and CNN and the Associated Press. They all just kind of posted this video, and you know, here's like the Associated Press here's the headline: Jimmy Kimmel held his baby son as he returned to his late night show after a week off for the boy's heart, and then started to talk about Chip, pleads for health care, you know. And of course, what happened was there was somebody from the Daily Beast that wrote about it, basically completely ignoring the fact what you just talked about, that the House did have a vote on this, that it did pass, and that most Democrats voted against it. And the reason why they voted against it, because the Republicans wanted to offset the cost of CHIP by charging more making wealthy Medicare recipients pay a little bit more in premiums every month. So
that seems like a good idea.
It is a good idea. It's a great idea. I mean, I don't understand.
Why would you want to do that? Who's against wealthy recipients, you know, or on welfare, basically? Let's admit that Medicare is welfare, you know, having to pay some of their own way.
I don't understand this constant talk from Democrats about millionaires, billionaires, the rich. But all of a sudden, when somebody turns 67, their wealth disappears. And now they're the elderly and they can't afford anything.
Even though they
hold
the majority of all the wealth in this country.
Exactly. They're the wealthiest demographic in the United States. But to sit there and say that they have to pay a little bit more in Medicare premiums to fund health care for children is beyond the pale.
Yeah.
And that was just another example where they just went with this thing. And it was another tearful plea by Jimmy Kimmel, you know, crying for the children who don't have health care. You know, and look, and I'm happy that his son is doing well. I mean, he had a heart defect and he had the surgery and everything is great. And that's wonderful. But I'm sorry, you know, dragging your kid out on stage to sit there and make a plea for this health care program using no factual information whatsoever is not something our news media should be glorifying. And they are. And that just adds to that level of distrust.
Well, and I mean, if they're so fond of Jimmy Kimmel, why don't they keep covering every obnoxious clip from The Man Show? If, you know, the guy's kind of a misogynist. So, you know, I was like, and they're not like they were like, you know, back in the 40s. These are pretty recent videos. So their hero is easily taken down. And if he was saying things that were things they weren't fond of, those videos would be playing 24/7.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, it's like his, you know, his partner on that show, Adam Carolla, you know,
it was hilarious.
If Carolla is, you know, if Carolla became much more political, he doesn't get very political on the show. He just basically just wants the government to get the hell out of the way. You know, so he's not very conservative. He's not even liberal. He's just kind of mostly apolitical, but just gets pissed off when the government does something stupid, which is constantly. Yeah. I mean, I think if he had a late night show and was talking and started talking badly about, you know, Democrats and everything like that, these videos from The Man Show would be pasted all over the news in a matter of seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Jimmy Kimmel's part of that. And nobody cares about that stuff. Or then he would sit there and say, well, that was just a show. We were just, you know, it was a comedy show. It wasn't real. No, the Juggies. Okay. Why don't you talk about the Juggies?
To, like, on Hollywood to like go around and feel around his pants. Play guess what's in my pants on video. And women who he had to check if they were 18. So, yeah. So, yeah.
Check IDs, Jimmy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure some of them just said, yeah, I'm 18.
God. To get on TV.
Yeah, exactly.
This,
exactly.
Like, middle-aged dude is, like, asking women to reach around his pants. Yeah. You know, so, yeah, it's charming.
But
sure.
and the other part of this is the media and their and the smugness, you know, that whole apple and banana thing that CNN did, you know, where they're, you know, or where with Jim Acosta tweeting, "We are the real news, Mr. President." You know, you look like an idiot when you get smug like that and then you make errors and screw up. You know, it's just like, you know, do your job, and you know, people will respect you if you do a good job. You know, it's part of the reason why, you know, Jake Tapper was the one that led with that story. And, you know, but his reputation is still pretty much intact because he basically just does his job. He doesn't go around moralizing about how wonderful the media is the way Chuck Todd does and the way Jim Acosta does. And so when they get something wrong, people are going to sit there and point and laugh at them, as they should. That's the way I see it. Yeah, you have a job to do. It's not, you're doing a job the way anybody else is doing a job. You know, and yeah, you have an importance. Like you said before, you know, their job is to kind of fact check the government. You know, hey, if the government is lying, if the government is doing something wrong, then there is their purpose. That's what their purpose is as part of the Fourth Estate, is to sit there and shine light on the truth. But shining light on the truth is not sitting there, we are real news, Mr. President, and acting like, you know, when you shout questions at a press conference, you know, that you're doing some kind of civic duty as opposed to just doing what you're getting paid to do.
No, they're acting like giant children. You know, I mean, they're falling into this trap of defending their reputation because they feel so entitled to be listened to. And I think people would happily listen to them if they were unfailingly accurate and perhaps not so biased.
Yeah, well, the bias thing is critical. And that, you know, that of course came through today with something that was just absolutely hilarious. So the New York Times, you know, several months ago did this thing where they counted Trump's lies through 10 months in office. And they came up with like 103 fibs or whatever that he told in his first 10 months of office. And they reported today, they said, oh, well, when we did that, we had a lot of people come back and say, well, did you do it for Barack Obama? And, you know, so they said, so we went through and we did the work and we came up with, you know, basically what they were saying is, I'm trying to scroll back here to where they talked about this because it was hilarious. Basically, they said, yeah, we did this and we kind of went and did our due diligence and said, so we compared, you know, we've compared lies. And so for the first 10 months, in his first 10 months, Trump told nearly six times as many falsehoods as Obama did during his entire presidency. The New York Times claims that Barack Obama only told 18 lies throughout his entire two terms. And when I saw that, I said, you've got to be kidding me. I said, where the hell did they get this information? I said, did they get it from PolitiFact? I'm thinking maybe they got it from PolitiFact, because PolitiFact, as much as they are, as they claim to be objective fact checkers, they are a left-leaning fact check organization. They've been known to sit there and give like mostly false ratings to something they admit within the story that they're writing is true. But because the way the Republicans said it makes it false or some kind of crap like that. But I went and looked, and it was like, you know, President Obama, PolitiFact named 20 on the first page. And this is, you know, they have their different ratings, pants on fire, false, mostly false, that kind of thing. These are the ones that are just particularly rated false. Lies that he told. You know, for one, and when he says here, you know, he says, when he says, where is he? He says his comment about extremists being a JV team wasn't specifically referring to the Islamic State, to ISIS. Well, it was. And PolitiFact rated that as false. They rated it as a lie. I don't think that's in the New York Times one. But he also had, like, I think the PolitiFact hit him with about 9 or 10 pants on fire ratings. PolitiFact, under the false heading, 71 lies. Now, of course, you know, people sit there and say, oh, well, look at Trump, 103 in 10 months. And, well, yeah, I mean, I don't care. Yeah, you know, Trump lies a lot. So what? That's not the point. The point here is that the New York Times, who were saying that they did their due diligence, who did reporting, who dug in to determine, you know, that what Obama said was actually a lie and not just, you know, something where he was off a little bit, to come up with only 18 over a period of 8 years is freaking ridiculous.
And that's pretty.
Huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty pathetic attempt. I mean, I think there's more of a. This isn't just a difference in count. I think it's a difference in impact. Like, Trump lies like breathing, but they're not impactful largely because no one really cares, you know. And I don't want to say that lightly. Like, I'm not in love with the fact that he just kind of says crap and it doesn't really make sense, or it might not be true or whatever. But at the same time, none of them are as impactful as the lies I recall, just off the top of my head, and none of which political fact actually had, was, if you like your plan, you can keep it, was one of the most monumental lies told to the American people that really disrupted a healthcare system that had an 86% satisfaction rate with people who had health insurance. You know, the $600 million that went to Iran, the unilateral dealing and lack of actual treaties and work that went through ordinary process through Congress, the immense amount of executive power grabs that have occurred in the Obama administration. I look at those as lies. What the IRS did to citizens who had different political beliefs and persuasions, Obama lying multiple times about his stance on gay marriage for political convenience. None of those are listed. The funniest lie I think about is him saying Hillary was likable enough, because clearly that wasn't true. So even there, I mean, he didn't mean it to be false, but he ended up being wrong as well.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's the difference in impact for me. It's when he said things, he destroyed a healthcare system largely, or lied about money going to Iran, nuclear arms deals. These are big things.
Yeah, well, yeah, I totally agree. One of the pants on fire ratings that they gave Obama was something he said in 2013. He goes, what we said was, you can keep your plan if it hasn't changed since the law passed. Well, that is a pants on fire rating. That's an absolutely accurate pants on fire rating, because that's not what he said at all. He promised people they'd be able to keep whatever plan they had intact. And you're right. Who gives a rat's ass if Donald Trump's bragging about the crowd size at his inauguration? Is that really important to your life? Is that something that has an impact on your life? No, but when you're right. When you're telling millions of people, don't worry, this healthcare plan we're implementing is not going to impact your plan. If you have your doctor and you want to keep it, you're going to be able to keep that doctor. And if you have a particular plan, you're going to be able to keep that plan. And PolitiFact, I think, rated that one year the lie of the year. You know,
yeah.
Which it's true. You're right. That's the whole thing. Let's go through the lies and determine which ones have a greater deal of impact on that. And again, what bugged me about this New York Times thing was other journalists tweeting it out and not even taking into consideration, not even thinking that number 18 throughout his entire administration, that can't be true. It simply cannot be true. Once again, it gives fodder for people like me and you and everybody else to sit there and say, you know what, you guys, it's hard to trust you. You know, I realize you're the opinion page that was writing this, but it doesn't matter. You still have to get stuff correct.
Well, and it's kind of a nonsensical opinion. Who cares? I mean, I don't know what the point is. If Trump starts telling lies that are impactful to me, I'll pay more attention. There's not much I can do. He's the president. He likes to kind of stretch the truth, argue about crowd sizes and his food and whatever. I don't know. But none of it is like the IRS trying to destroy my life. Me not being able to buy a health plan with a just catastrophic care. Iran getting a nuclear weapon. Like those were bigger. I don't know. Those are bigger things to me. And I think that's the difference here. And maybe the New York Times should care about what the lie means and what it was used for.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing. It's like it goes back to the whole Kimmel thing, you know. Kimmel is telling lies that actually have impact, you know, when he's sitting there.
A lot of people believe it and they consume that. And then they further are removed from the truth and understanding of how the system works, how healthcare works, how children's health insurance works. And they just think that, you know, children are dying all over the United States. And it's absolutely absurd. We're the most wealthy nation on earth and we're more well off than we've been in like 100 years, and this constant like hair on fire, people are going to die thing. I don't think it's going to work, because, you know, all of a sudden CHIP won't be renewed and everybody's like, oh, it seems largely fine. Oh, net neutrality is going to be gone. And I've heard like, you know, it's going to kill gay people now. It's like literally
yeah.
Tweets. And it's like, it's going to be fine, guys. I mean, I think that's kind of the fun part of this administration is calling every single bluff on like these panics. And saying, see, it was fine. None of this was important. And maybe that will wake people up to say, what is the proper role of government? And what should it, shouldn't, and not be doing? And how do you actually pass laws versus using unaccountable federal agencies to change things in our economy?
Right. And you know, and that's the whole thing. It's like, and I was explaining to somebody, I was saying, you know, when you're going to sit there and go into these kind of histrionics over stuff, when you're going to say, you know, Obama economists predicts 10,000 people a year will die if the GOP tax cut plan goes through. It's like, yeah, I mean,
that's the Laffer curve of death.
Yeah. And I was like, is that what economists do now? They predict death, you know? I think it was Jim Treacher who said, I found that, you know, I think we may have talked about this already, but Democrats have found the cure for death, and it's increased taxes, you know,
pay more taxes,
you'll live forever. You know, but you know, the thing is, it's like that is another thing where the media really doesn't push back on. Yeah. They'll push back on Republicans or economists that claim, yeah, you know what, this tax cut is going to increase growth X amount. It's going to do this. It's going to create X amount of jobs. They'll dig in and do that, you know. But if somebody sits there and says 10,000 people are going to die as a result of this tax bill, suddenly the media is kind of like, yeah, well, whatever. You know, if that's what happens, that's what happens. You know, it's like, you know, where is the pushback on that? That's what I want to see. Again, if you're going to do your job right, you need to do it overall. And it's like, you know, you have to sit there and kind of look at something. And it was, you know, and I'm quoting here from something I watched with Bob Woodward. And it was funny because when, you know, one of the things that he said was he talked about the press conferences and people yelling questions at the press secretary or the president or whatever. And he says, you know, he goes, journalists shouting questions at press secretaries is not journalism. He said, journalism is trying to take and understand something in a comprehensive way. And that, it, to me, is critical, because if journalists are just going to sit there and listen to what, like, somebody Jimmy Kimmel says, who has no expertise in this, and just take what he says and repeat it, you know, rather than report on it, you know, it's like, okay, I'm at the Washington Post. I'm writing about this Jimmy Kimmel thing. He's saying this, and this about Chip. Fine, go ahead and report that. But why not go then to, say, Orrin Hatch, who was one of the people who created CHIP, or to Speaker Ryan's office, or to somebody's office, it's somebody on the Republican side, and say, here's what Jimmy Kimmel was saying about CHIP last night. What do you have to say about that? And then allow them to present their argument, and then sit there and they can sit there and say no.
And then there should be a third step where they just go and document what actually happened.
Right, and then actually go... like Glenn Kessler did, and do a fact check on him and say, you know, and sit there and say, Jimmy Kimmel's emotional plea was this, but the problem is a lot of what he said wasn't true. Why is that so difficult for reporters to do? That's their job.
They don't know that's their job. I think many of them think their job is to amplify particular interests. And maybe the media is a little bit of a mix of actual reporting and infotainment now. And it's apparent. I mean, like, you watch CNN, Fox, and it's infotainment. It's news fed to you in a monotonous, like, relentless message format that I don't know if it's that informative, but you certainly walk away with a particular position in your mind, but I'm not sure it's healthy for us.
Exactly. I think that's exactly right. And which is why I tend to avoid almost all cable news nowadays. I found, you know, reading, even though, you know, I don't, The New York Times and the Washington Post, you know, the New York Times editorial page is just a cluster of ridiculousness. But they do have some good reporting in their main pages. You know, I think they have some great reporters there. Same thing with the Washington Post. And the Washington Post, you know, their editorial board, you know, you'll be sitting there like, yes, one day, and then next day you're banging your head on your desk, and then, you know, the Wall Street Journal does good reporting. And I found I've been going more towards reading magazines and more newspapers and everything like that than instead of relying on cable news. And you go watch Don Lemon at 10 o'clock at night, and he's got 14 guests on a panel. You know, I remember when Greg Gutfeld did a joke about that several years ago on Red Eye, where he had this panel with like 72 people on it. And it's starting to become a reality. It's like, they have these shows, you know, where they have this panel of five or six people on for about 10 minutes discussing something, and nobody can sit there and actually articulate a thought during that. You know, basically they're just kind of chirping, they're barking out a couple of little sentences, and that's it.
I like the one where the screen gets so many boxes that you're like, I don't even know what's going on.
Yeah.
Where you're like, there's like eight heads on this television.
There's eight heads. And the only thing that's interesting to watch is the reaction of others to what other people are saying. You know, you see them rolling their eyes or kind of like, you know.
It's entertainment. Like, it's meant to be entertainment. And it's meant to be, you know, let me root for my side, your side. And yay, my side, like. My ambassador of my opinion that I don't really understand one, you know, it's like, yay.
Well, it's going to, you know, now what's interesting is we're going to see how the media handles this is that, you know, Democrats are calling for, you know, Doug Jones to be seated immediately, you know, forget about all the processes that Alabama has to go through in order to, you know, to basically, you know, confirm that he won and, you know, go submit all the records and go through all the processes that states go through after elections. They're saying he should be seated now because they want that vote. They don't want Luther Strange there when they have the final vote on their tax cut bill, which at this point I can't even, it's hard to keep track of what they have and what they don't have. I know Marco Rubio today said he basically took the Doug Jones victory and said, well, now I'm going to use some more leverage for that child tax credit that I wanted. You know, and people are, you know, Bob Corker saying, oh, I don't know about voting for this now. And so it's, you know, we're at a point where maybe they don't get this done either.
There's nothing worse than each senator knowing they can be uniquely special now on the news.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sorry. I, you know, I am not one that's opposed to the child tax credit, but the way that they formulated this thing, it's basically, you know, it's a welfare payment. That's what it is.
Yeah,
because
I'm not fond of like tax payments out, especially when like, certain income brackets aren't paying any taxes at all.
Yeah. I mean, you already have the earned income tax credit, which
I think is ridiculous.
It was a Reagan
thing.
Well,
like how many things you can claim? I'm like, oh my gosh, you know.
The thing is it's subject to a lot of abuse. And I knew people that I worked with. Couples that purposely did not get married but lived together so they both would claim the earned income tax credit because their salaries they lived together, they had kids together, didn't get married, they filed, you know, like they were doing single returns, even though that combined they might have made $55,000-$60,000, because they had kids they were making like $28,000 or $29,000. They were eligible for the earned income tax credit, and both of them would get quote unquote tax returns of anywhere from $2,000 to $4,000.
This is the exact kind of thing that Ronald Reagan would be totally horrified about. Like the idea of putting in tax policy that disincentivizes marriage is insane. It's truly bad for children. And that's the problem with it is you get those kind of behaviors in the marketplace. I have no problem with wanting to help people truly in need, but these kind of systems, they never quite do it. It just, you get this kind of crap. And then that's like for Democrats, they should actually want to look like if you are a person who wants to be able to collect taxes in a routine manner, you should root for a system that's fair and isn't defrauded easily, because that's when a system that people will actually feel confident paying their taxes into. And this is like a thing that just blows my mind that you can't actually get a bipartisan agreement here, because I'm like, you're a person who likes to raise taxes. If I at least felt like there was some semblance of fairness in the system, I wouldn't be so opposed. You know, I just get kind of outraged that I'm asked to pay all sorts of disproportionate amounts when other people are scamming the system all the time, and that you're punished one way or the other if you have a job or an income this way. And it's all these choices that I just feel like they're getting in my business, and you should just try and tax people in a reasonable rate without trying to dictate their lifestyle choices.
Right.
And that's what gets me is I feel like there should be some sort of sanity movement in tax reform. To deal with what you're exactly suggesting is you shouldn't create incentives for families to you know, not have bonds as tight as marriage.
Yeah, that's a great point. I, you know, absolutely agree with that. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back right after this little message from our friends at HelloFresh. Hey, Fifth Estate fans, Jay Caruso here to tell you about our friends at HelloFresh. HelloFresh knows that its customers are busy and loves that they wear their busyness as a badge of honor. While the holiday season can creep toward chaos, there's a festive hustle and bustle you should take time to enjoy. In that spirit, HelloFresh says, go ahead, embrace the hustle and bustle. They'll be there to calm the chaos in the meantime. HelloFresh does the shopping, planning, and delivery. So all you have to do is hustle, bustle, and enjoy. Finally, you can enjoy not having to plan dinner, spending money on takeout for an easy night, or worrying about gathering ingredients week after week. HelloFresh offers a wide variety of chef-curated recipes that change weekly. You won't spend all night in the kitchen because recipes only take about 30 minutes. It's great. You can feel confident when you're cooking because HelloFresh offers simple recipes outlined on pictured step-by-step instruction cards. They offer three meal plans to choose from: classic, veggie, and family. HelloFresh is delivered right to your door in recyclable insulated packaging, and all of that for less than $10 a meal. I recently got the chance to try a HelloFresh meal, and I had to ask myself why I'd waited so long. The difference in quality was clear. So Thai spiced pork meatballs I had, it came with a pasta and broccoli, which is great. And then there was also an adobe loco steak with like a, it was great. It was like a very delicious steak, you know, tender, and it came with like corn and some other sides. I mean, they really go all out when they're doing this. It's just terrific. So what's great is we have a special offer to listeners of this podcast, the Fifth Estate Podcast. For $30 off your first week of HelloFresh, visit HelloFresh.com and enter the promo code ESTATE30, ESTATE30. One more time, to try HelloFresh and get $30 off your first week, go to HelloFresh.com and use promo code ESTATE30 at checkout. All right. So anyway, we're gonna start wrapping up here. So Amy, as you're a consumer of news, you know, we all are, obviously. Maybe not the way some people are. You know, some people have Fox News on in their house all day long. Other people don't. You know. So how about this? So like, what if you were gonna sit there and say to somebody, let's say like Jim Acosta, who's one of these people that thinks, you know, his shit doesn't stink in terms of him being Mr. Journalist. What would you say to him, you know, as a consumer and somebody who's a conservative and understands how the media is portrayed? What would you say to him as a means of like kind of improving how they can do their job? Or not so much how they would do their job, but what is it you think would help restore some trust that you have in them, that they're doing their job properly? There, that's better.
I think accurately reporting the foibles and faults on both sides of the aisle would be a great step. There's no doubt that politicians and people who work in government generally are probably fallible, and I think you could start covering that in a routine manner. I'd also like to see the media stop focusing on what are their favorite, you know, political obsessions, like anytime there's a gun control thing. Like if they could cover live news without going to the policy implications of their favorite particular policy just for once, that would be satisfying. You know, just cover actually what's happening without trying to be like, and this is why we need gun control, or, you know, or whatever the thing is they're worried about. Or this is why, you know, abortion needs to be for everyone. You know, that's the thing, is that they pivot again to the talking point of the particular party or persuasion. And it's very isolating if you don't agree, you know, so then you immediately stop listening to them, because it's like anybody, if they just come up to you in the street and then just say something outrageous, like you don't agree with, like putting ketchup on a hot dog, I'd be like, I don't really believe you anymore. You're not a credible source of information. You know, and it's joke, but it's true. Like people don't form an image of you being credible if you keep putting up positions that are very polarizing and make it evident that you aren't being a broker of truth. So I would suggest talking to maybe people with different political beliefs and trying to understand what their underlying interests are for why they hold those positions, and realize that underlying interest isn't largely to kill people would be a great step in the right direction. And that, you know, their underlying interests are probably as altruistic and empathetic and as passionate about how the future of this country should be as the positions you have, and they're just different tactics on how to get there. And for once, if just someone on the left who happened to be in the media would actually appreciably understand that and treat my positions as if they were legitimately different tactical choices for what would be a better country, I would feel listened to, which isn't their job to be able to listen to. But if they wanted to engender empathy with people who don't always agree with them, I would suggest you understand your audience a bit more and go a bit broader and understand how it isn't an us versus them, and that people really have underlying positions that are held for typically pretty solid reasons.
Yeah. And I would say to some of them, you know, because I work in this business, and it's funny, I hear it, and, you know, so the emails that I get and stuff that I write and everything like that, you know, it's, I'm a conservative on an editorial board that leans left. And, you know, when I write a column, I get angry hate mail from largely from Trump supporters who get mad that I criticize Trump. But I mean, that's for commentary. But for you guys that are doing the hard news, I think what's critical is that, you know, I think what's critical is that, you know, you basically what the news media needs to do is they need to start. Or they need to stop just taking at face value the harshest criticisms of Republicans at, you know, again, at face value. So again, that the thing that the Jimmy Kimmel thing was perfect, was a perfect example of the media beclowning themselves by not sitting there, you know, by not, like, you know, being more critical of what they said. By not saying, but be more critical of what Kimmel said, by not going after him, by not sitting there saying, sorry, this is wrong, this is incorrect, this is not right, this is not, you know, this, what he said about Chip is absolutely 100% wrong. And it doesn't matter if he had his kid on the stage with him. Just because he put his kid out there doesn't make him right. And it doesn't give him any kind of moral authority. And it's little things like that, that they think, that the media thinks doesn't matter, but it really does matter. Because what happens is when they see that happening and you say, you can't push back on this, when you go and make a mistake, when you get a story wrong, people aren't going to have any sympathy for you. And they're going to sit there and they're going to start believing what Donald Trump said, which is that the news is fake and that they're purposely doing it. People reacted in horror to the press secretary saying, you know, you guys are out there, you know, writing false stories. You know, I don't think they are. I don't think these reporters are actually out there creating false stories to put forward. But it's something that people are going to accuse you of if they're not going to see an effort on your part to push back against BS narratives that the left is pushing every single day. So that's my the end of my little rant there. And I think Amy's still here. I'm here. Bloop, 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 bloop.
Connection is rough.
Connection issues. Ah, that happens. That happens.
Yes, I'm back. Well, I've been able to hear you intermittently. I don't know. It's just a little light on the Wi-Fi tonight. It's the net neutrality thing.
Yes, it is. They're throttling this podcast, Amy. That's what they're doing. They're throttling us because they don't want the truth to get out. So... All right. So I don't even know if we're going to do a show next. Hopefully we'll do a show next week before Christmas. And then I think we're going to take a week off. You know, the Christmas is on a Monday this year. And then the Monday after that is New Year. So I don't think we're going to sit there and try and wrangle people up on Christmas week or try to get somebody on here before the New Year. So what we'll try to do is we'll try and get one more show in. Maybe we'll get a guest and we'll just kind of do a year-end thing, and we'll talk about some of the best stuff and some of the worst stuff, and also give an assessment of the Trump administration after 1 year. That should be pretty fun. We can do that. And then we'll be back in 2018. Man, 2018.
Nice.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. 2018. Jeez, I remember when I was sitting there and I was like, you know, when I was, yeah, I guess it, what year was it? It was like 1988 or something. No, not even. I was like 12. So it was like 1982, and it was like 18 years to like 2000. I was going to be 30, and I thought that was like forever. It's like, I zoomed past that, man. And now it's just like, oh, shit. You know, it's going to be a few years and I'm going to be 50. Not anymore like this, you know. So it's crazy that another year has already come and gone. You know, and we have three more years of the Trump administration and Democrats and everything like that. So it's just, I think after, you know, finally when it gets to the end of 2019 and we get into 2020, I think we're all just going to be very tired. You know, not even sure what we're going to be able to do. All right.
I don't think the media can keep this pace up. Everybody's going to just fall asleep.
We're like, you know what? We're done. We're just going to take off for a year. We'll be back when the primaries start in 2020. But 2019, that's it. We're beat. We're tired.
Well, to be fair, they had 8 years of rest. So they should be able to handle these four.
Ooh, boom, boom, boom. There, that was the ref adds a point for a well-crafted low blow. I like that one. All right. That's going to do it for this week, folks. Thanks for listening. Hey, again, go to iTunes. Tell us how much you like us. You know, we have a new co-host here. So, you know, make her feel better. You guys used to sit there and, like, you know, soothe the, you know, Neil's ego. Amy doesn't have an ego. But, you know, hey, we like to see nice things said about us. So go out there to iTunes, leave a review, leave a rating, tell your friends to subscribe. And we will see you next time here on the Fifth Estate.